This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
It's Friday. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's quitting time.
Time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
I don't create cakes for Halloween, promote sexual or anti-American themes, or disparage people, including people who identify as LGBT. For me, it's never about the person, never about the person making the request. It's always about the cake. It's always about the message the person wants the cake to communicate.
You can't handle the truth!
This was done through the regular order. The Democrats had plenty of notice. Chairman Hatch can attest to all the multiple hearings, markups, open amendment process. Everybody had plenty of opportunity to see the measure. You complain about process when you're losing. And that's what you heard on the floor tonight.
All right.
Indeed. It's Friday. Doesn't that make you feel like singing hallelujah? Well, I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. And it's just been a big week. So much news to take in. And that's what we do here every day, Monday through Friday, is break it down from a biblical Christian worldview, conservative worldview. And coming up first on the show this evening is Representative Diane Black of Tennessee. She's going to be here talking about tax reform and then good news for gun owners. Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. That's a pretty interesting idea. You know, as a gun owner myself, I have an app on my phone. Always have to look at what states are good and legal. Don't want to get in trouble that way. And then we may tap in a little bit into the Congressional Accountability and Hush Fund Elimination Act. So good to have Representative Black on the show. And then we'll take a look at yesterday's testimony from FBI Director Christopher Wray and what Congressman Jim Jordan had to say. Wall Street Journal columnist Kimberly Strassel will be here for that segment. And then college campuses, they're at it again, working overtime to stifle references to Christmas. Sterling Beard, editor of Campus Reform, will be here to break it down. And of course, we'll take your calls. And you know, this month we've had a generous donor who has been doubling your gifts. Gifts, if you give a $10 gift, it becomes $20, $50 becomes $100, and so on. Make sure that you take advantage of that. We know so many people appreciate what we do here on Washington Watch. You can give us a call right now at 866-372-7234. We have callers on standby that will be happy to take your donation, and those donations can also be made at tonyperkins.com. Well, as I said earlier, tax reform has been big news this week, and yesterday Congress passed a two-week funding bill avoiding a government shutdown a day ahead of the deadline. And this comes as Republican leaders and the White House are pushing to pull together the pieces of a $1 trillion-plus tax cut plan being hashed out by House and Senate lawmakers, and also big news for gun owners. We'll get into that as well. With us now is Representative Diane Black. She represents the 6th Congressional District of Tennessee and the chairman of the House Budget Committee, and also serves on the Ways and Means Committee. Congresswoman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Russ. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's always great to have you on. You always give us the truth. Tell us, where are we at right now on the conference committee with taxes?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm very proud that we were able to get what I believe to be a really good tax bill out of the House of Representatives. The Senate has also had their form of the bill. And now we're working to combine the two bills, and the that is a conference committee. That means that we just sit down and we look at the differences. And really, honestly, what we try to do is take the best from both plans and put those together and bring them back to both bodies, have them vote on it, and get it to the president by Christmas time. And give the American people a Christmas gift.
Yeah, that would be a great Christmas gift. And is that going to happen, you think?
Oh, I do. I'm very encouraged by just the conversations that the conference committee has had so far. I am on that conference committee, so we'll be talking all weekend long, and we hope to have something to give to the members that they'll be able to vote on by next week.
Now, no surprise, Senate Democrats are strongly opposed to the bill, arguing that it would override individual states' efforts to, for their taxes. And some of the blue states are really concerned about those. And we know there's a lot of mythology in that kind of thinking. But do you think we're going to get any Democrats on the vote?
I understand that there are some Democrat senators who feel like they can vote for the bill, but who knows what will happen. I hope that we'll have some members of the House that will come and help us to get this passed, because it really, really is a good thing for the American people. Look, we have not reformed the tax code since 1986, and Reagan was the president then. Look at what it did for the economy during that time. There were actually periods of time where there was a 12% growth in the gross domestic product during that period of time. You know, we have had less than 2% over the last 8 to 10 years. And so can you imagine if the economy were growing, let's just even say at 4% compared to what we've had less than 2%, it would be just marvelous for the American people, because when the economy grows, that means that there's more opportunity for jobs, there's more opportunity for more wages in their paycheck, more money in their paycheck. And so this is a great thing for our country. We've been in the doldrums, and this gives us an opportunity to finally be able to see our economy grow and be competitive with countries all around the world.
Well, you know, the jobs report came out, and U.S. has added 228,000 new jobs in November, and unemployment's at, 4.1%, lowest in 17 years. Doesn't that say something about how just marketplace people and business people and Wall Street are responding to this?
Exactly. Thank you for that, Russ. And when we hear Speaker Pelosi say this is Armageddon, I said, tell the American people that a 3.3% growth index just right now, and this without even doing tax reform, that's somehow Armageddon. I mean, this is a great, great news for people. And just think about when we finally get this done and we are able to reduce the size of the code, make it not so it's not so complicated, give people an opportunity to be able to have a doubling of their deductions. So if they normally would have done a form that would have required them to save all their little receipts and be able to have a tax consultant do it because it's so complicated, we're going to make that easier for them. We're going to go from $12,000 standard deduction up to $24,000, double that right off the bat. Families will be able to take $24,000 off of their tax burden. So all of this is so good for the American people. It is, believe me, not Armageddon, and the people won't believe that. So no. I think the Democrats better jump on board.
Hey, let's pivot just a moment. You've been involved with the Concealed Carry Act. Tell us about that, because there's a lot of folks that listen to this program that believe in the Second Amendment, responsible gun owners.
Absolutely, and I'm one of those people. I've had my gun carry permit for a number of years. I'm a lifetime member of the NRA. And there are places where if you leave your state, and obviously in the state of Tennessee, we are a concealed carry permit state, and we do have our carry permit that we carry just like we do our license from state to state as we travel. But yet at the same time, as you said, and I know on the teaser, that you have to look up the state that you're going to go visit to see, can you carry your gun there? Furthermore, if you're driving your car and you drive through a state to get to the state that is your terminus, you may actually be breaking the law by
exactly.
even driving through another state. So this just simply says that state to state, just like our driver's license is good state to state, that we're going to have an opportunity to be able to carry our guns in those states. If we're permitted, we can permit, we'll be permitted in other states. There's a reciprocity, just like it is with a driver's license.
And apparently that passed 231 to 198, and six House Democrats crossed over the aisle. So there's a little bit of activity there. Right. And so what happens with that now?
Well, it will go to the Senate, and we all know that the Senate requires more than just a simple majority over there. God bless them. I wish they would change their procedure over there, because, if a majority is simply 50 plus one, that's what it should be. But with their filibuster rule, they have to have 60 votes. And so I'm hoping that perhaps we'll see the same thing there, where we'll have some Democrats that will follow suit and say this is a good thing. We have some Democrats that are gun owners and that do believe in guns, whether we'll have enough of those or not to pass this. But in the meantime, this is important, and it is important for this reason, is it is saying that Congress would move forward with this. If we didn't have the Senate with a filibuster and we didn't have to have 60 over there, I believe that we would get this done pretty quickly, because I think we would get some Democrats that would join us, which makes the case once again that the Senate needs to change the rules. They need to change it to a simple majority. There is nothing in the Constitution that requires what they're doing. They're just antiquated rules. And I just continue to say change them. They change them for the Supreme Court justice, but they could change them for other things that would make it so much easier for us to get our conservative principles passed in both the House and the Senate, and do it now while we have a president who would sign these conservative bills into law.
Right. Now, you've been busy. You've also been involved with this policy called the Hush Fund Elimination Act. Tell us about that just real quickly.
I have, and I'm very disappointed that we have members of Congress who are just acting in what's such an immature way and somehow thinking they can be held above the law. But we, if nothing else, should be held. We should hold ourselves to higher standards, because we are public servants and we are making laws, and people do look to us as being honorable. And it's so disappointing to me when we have members of Congress who act in a dishonorable way. And so that's what we've seen with this sexual harassment. We're seeing more come out. My heart is broken as I see people that I've had great trust and great honor for that have in some way violated someone else's space. And it just is really very disappointing. And so I believe that when people do this, they should be there should be transparency. And, you know, for the victim, there must be transparency, because if we don't allow this transparency, the victim will believe in some way it's their fault. And we need to hold those who have done something inappropriate, like sexual harassment, we need to hold them responsible. And furthermore, I believe if you know that you are going to be made, this is going to be made public and there's going to be transparency, that you will think twice about doing something. You can't hide this. This cannot be a secret. We've got to get this taken care of in our Congress. And so this simply says, too, that there's going to be transparency. There will not be public dollars used to settle any cases. And if there has been, then you will have to pay it back.
Well, Representative Black, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Just real quickly, what are you doing for Christmas?
Oh, I'm going to hug and kiss some grandchildren. I'm going to cook lots and lots of good food for them.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Well, thank you so much. May you have a blessed Christmas. Thank you for being one of our champions here on Washington Watch.
You are very welcome. Have a good season.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, coming up next, we'll talk with Kimberly Strassel of The Wall Street Journal. She'll be here to talk about the FBI Director Chris Wray's testimony that happened yesterday. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be back right after this.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Taken opposition research, dressing it all up and turning it into an intelligence document and taking it to the FISA court so they could spy on the other campaign? If that happened, that is as wrong as it gets. And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. You could clear it all up. You could clear it all up for all of us here, all the Congress who wants to know, and frankly, all of America who wants to know. You could clear it all up by release. We sent you a letter 2 days ago. Just release the application. Tell us what was in it. Tell us if I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. I think that's exactly what happened. And if it did, it is as wrong as it can be. And people who did that need to be held accountable.
That was Congressman Jim Jordan yesterday. Wow. In a hearing in Capitol Hill, confronting FBI Director Christopher Wray. And a request from Republican lawmakers yesterday for information about a key agent accused of political bias against President Trump and the role the man played in exonerating Hillary Clinton of criminal wrongdoing in starting surveillance of Trump campaign officials. Well, I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. Joining us now is Kimberly Strassel, Potomac Watch columnist for The Wall Street Journal and author of The Intimidation Game. Kimberly, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it is great to be here again.
You've written a column, Obstruction of Congress. You're basically arguing for integrity. How do we get back to the right way to conduct an investigation?
Well, here's the problem at the moment, which is that you have an FBI that potentially did do what Congressman Jordan suggested they did, meaning they might well have used the Steele dossier, the now infamous Steele dossier, which we know is, in fact, opposition research from the Clinton campaign, as a basis for a warrant to wiretap Americans. The only way we can know that is if Congress is allowed to see the file that the FBI put together, its presentation to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. They are resisting doing that. But we're going to have a situation in which Congress is allowed to finally and fully exercise its oversight responsibilities and rights. And so far, the FBI is resisting that.
And you sent out a tweet, you know, isn't that funny how a president has, he's like set the standard on tweets or something, but I'm reading them more than I used to, and I read yours a lot. And you said a clarifying moment at the Ray hearing. Ray suggests he can't turn over dossier-related FISA material because it's quote-unquote classified. And he was informed the judiciary has the primary oversight of FISA court, and so, of course, can see classified info in a classified setting, right?
This is preposterous, the argument he was making. He was essentially saying, I know you're Congress. I know that you have oversight authority over the FISA court. By the way, the Judiciary Committee is also the primary investigating body, primary congressional committee overseeing the Justice Department and the FBI. It has a right to see absolutely any document it wants to see that relates to FISA, that relates to the FBI, that relates to the Justice Department, whether it's classified or not. They have the ability to see them in classified situations. But it's a preposterous idea what the FBI director was putting forward, that somehow they get to decide what Congress gets to see, and that they get to set the contours of that as well. It would that under that standard, the FBI would be allowed to do anything it wanted against any American citizen at any time. And when somebody tried to look into it, the FBI could just say, nope, you know what? It's classified.
In matter of fact, you've said that the important point here is that Mueller and the DOJ deliberately withheld info from the information from the Congress that it knew would undermine its credibility in the FBI, and you called it a scandal.
Well, we know that that's what they did. Look, they demoted Peter Strzok, which is, I guess, how we're saying his name, Peter Strzok, the FBI official, all the way back in the summertime, because they were aware, Mr. Mueller was aware, Justice Department was aware that he had engaged in all of these thousands of emails, some of which appear to show anti-Trump bias, pro-Hillary bias. And it was clearly problematic enough that Mr. Mueller kicked him off his team. So he's known about it that long, and yet, despite the fact that Mr. Mueller and the Justice Department know that Congress and the House Intelligence Committee is conducting a probe into supposedly bad behavior at the FBI, despite they know that the interest out there for whether or not there was any political bias in these investigations at the FBI, despite the fact that there are subpoenas from the House Intelligence Committee that would have shown up these text emails, they chose not to inform Congress and also not to respond to the subpoenas so that they could keep this information to themselves.
And, you know, just a little while ago, I don't know if you've heard this yet, but 36 laptops and other devices were seized during a raid on Paul Manafort's home. I mean, I can hardly keep track of my own laptop and cell phone. 36 laptops.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have 36 laptops. That would just be horrifying. And I think anyone who has 36 laptops needs to take a vacation more often.
Well, and you've also said, does anyone think this crowd intends to investigate Justice Department or the FBI misdeeds? To put it another way, does anyone think they intend to investigate themselves? It's like the chicken or the fox guarding the chicken coop, right?
Well, I think this is one of the great fictions of the Mueller probe, is that, look, whatever you think of Mr. Mueller's integrity, and I'm not suggesting he doesn't have it, but the reality is the idea that this was an independent prosecutor who was put outside of the normal chain of command to look into what the FBI, to what had happened broadly in this thing. But then he brings along everyone who had been working on that Trump probe from the beginning. These are the people who are working for him at the moment. And the idea that they're going to fully look into this is just never going to happen.
Well, Kimberly Strassel of The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much. You always bring so much insight and integrity to these reports. We appreciate it. You have a blessed Christmas. Thank you for joining us tonight on Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, coming up next, you know what? We could do three stories a day, 5 days a week, sadly, on colleges and what they're doing. And yet I've got four kids, turn our kids over to universities. And the college is now trying to muzzle Christmas references, and a new survey says that millennials now find the term snowflake, snowflake, commonly applied to their age group as harmful. We'll talk with Sterling Beard of Campus Reform when we return.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
That's why I'm in radio. Keep my day job. People ask me, what instrument do you play? Well, I played the tuba in Marching Mizzou, but I play the radio. It's always in tune. Hey, I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm the producer of this program. Tony is the president of the Family Research Council. It's a pleasure to be with you on this happy Friday. And as another Christmas season approaches, colleges across the country are issuing their annual guidelines on how to make the season as inclusive as possible. And then, you know, the millennials, they've got this new term, snowflakes. And they don't like that. Says it causes mental anguish. Well, joining us now is Sterling Beard, editor of Campus Reform. Sterling, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is going to be one of those offensive segments. You know, but let's start. The University of California, Irvine, for instance, individual departments are encouraging to, quote, focus on celebrating a special occasion instead of a special holiday or Christmas, suggesting that they have a year-end celebration or celebrate seasonal themes such as fall, winter, and spring. So Sterling, what am I supposed to say? Hey, merry winter. Would that be appropriate? Would I get in trouble for that?
I doubt you would. That's a specific season. Maybe you could go really, really descriptive and sort of anodyne and say, "Hey, happy winter solstice, everybody,"
or "Happy merry snowflake."
Enjoy the 25th day of this particular month in the winter.
There you go. So, exactly. I mean, they really have issued this kind of guideline.
Yeah, exactly. And it talks about individual apartments, as you pointed out, being encouraged to focus on celebrating a special occasion instead of a specific holiday. But the thing that gets my goat a little bit is the sentence they included here, quote, "The holiday season should be considered an opportunity to demonstrate cultural sensitivity and inclusivity." If you want to talk about taking the Christ out of Christmas, I mean, that's not just doing it surgically. That is doing it with an axe.
Yeah, talk about intellectual dishonesty. I mean, we're talking about academia here, and you are not giving people permission to talk about the trueness of the season, which is Christmas or Hanukkah if you're Jewish. I mean, let's be fair about it, right? So it really is astounding that our universities, it's intellectual dishonesty, wouldn't you say?
Well, I'd say it's more intellectual cowardice, the idea mm-hmm. that you have a bunch of presumably highly educated people in these university departments who couldn't handle the idea of celebrating a religious holiday is kind of absurd, but that's apparently what they suggest. And keep in mind, they also requested academic departments, quote, ensure that office celebrations are not indirectly celebrating religious holidays, close mm-hmm. quote. Mm-hmm. You can't even indirectly make reference to it, so maybe you can't even call it Christmas at all. Who knows?
And not to be outdone, now, Sterling, this one really surprised me. The University of Alabama. Really? Seriously? Student newspaper ran an editorial attacking President Trump for returning a nativity scene to the White House grounds, calling the move, quote, disrespectful. This is in Alabama.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But keep in mind, I mean, it's no surprise. Academia has been such a, you know, sort of fortress for mm-hmm. progressivism in American society that even in the Deep South, even in Bama, the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, and my girlfriend's going to kill me for saying that. She's a Tennessee fan. But even at a school that you would think would be more conservative than the others, even in a very conservative state, you still get that progressive mindset where you can't even bring a nativity scene to the White House without them imagining other religions taking offense.
Well, I've got a child at Ole Miss, so, you know, you're talking to the choir here. And it's the same thing. You would think, oh, Mississippi, really? But, you know, just as liberal as they can be and not a whole lot of room for diversity of thought, and a majority of the professors are very liberal, and they won't have a conservative come on campus or to be, you know, a lecturer or whatnot. You have to go through the litmus test. And that brings up another thing, Sterling. This recent survey found that 74% of British millennials, I wonder what it is here in the U.S., are wary of being called snowflakes. But that's a term that they have these days because they're so sensitive and it causes mental health problems.
If you are, I mean, it's almost a little bit of the proof being in the pudding. If you are actually get mental health problems or think that you could have mental health problems from people saying that you are too fragile, maybe, and I don't want to suggest this and trigger anybody out there, but perhaps you are, in fact, a little too mm-hmm. fragile. People need to get a thicker skin, and that goes for our cousins across the pond as well.
Yeah. Well, and apparently the surveys of American millennials have found widespread support for censorship of hate speech and the creation of safe spaces. That was pretty big at Mizzou, where I went to school. You know, they created the safe spaces there. So it's just really interesting, and I go to your website all the time, campusreform.com, and you guys are busy. It's just a full-time thing. You are uncovering these kind of stories every day, aren't you?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we've run over 1,600 articles this year dealing with this kind of bias and abuse on college campuses. And so business, as you might say, is booming, and I kind of wish it weren't, but that's where we are.
Huh. Well, Sterling Beard of Campus Reform, thank you so much. You have a blessed Christmas. Thank you for being with us on Washington Watch.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, coming up next, remember last Friday I told you that I was 30 years old when I found my biological father? Well, I'm going to give you part two of that story, and we're going to take your calls, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Love that music. By the way, that music gets you in the giving mood, doesn't it? We're in our year-end campaign to support this radio program. We have a generous donor who is doubling every gift that comes in between now and the end of the month. So if you donate $10, becomes $20, $50, $100, $500, $1,000. You can give us a call right now. We have folks that are there waiting for your call. 866-372-7234. 866-FRC-RADIO. And folks are monitoring the phones. Or you can go to TonyPerkins.com. And we would love to see that total go up. And you've been very generous so far. We thank you for that. And really, quite honestly, depend on your support to bring you this news. I've been in radio 30 years. One of the best political shows on radio is this show, Washington Watch. Tony Perkins, he is just a wealth of information. I won't even try to keep up with his knowledge on this. Tony is awesome, and I'll just be me. I'll be Russ Jones. You can follow Tony on Twitter, at T Perkins. That's at T Perkins. You can follow me, at Russ Jones Speaks. Russ Jones Speaks. Well, we've got folks on the phone lines already. If you just hold on just a minute. Last Friday, I told you this it's heartfelt story was being transparent with you about not knowing my father, my biological father, until I was 30 years old. It's a painful story, but it's a good one. We talk now. We have since I was 30. We've been talking for nearly 30 years now and trying to make up for lost time. But, you know, I grew up in Kansas City, and a family of smokers. My grandparents smoked 3 packs of Marlboros a day. My grandfather owned a tow trucking business in downtown Kansas City, had a girly tattoo on his left arm, and a 6th grade education, grew up in Mound City, Missouri. But he was one of the smartest men I knew. But they all smoked cigarettes, and one day he pulled me in and he said, "Russell," this is when I was about 12 years old, he said, "Russell," he was holding a pack of Marlboro cigarettes, and he had a very colorful vocabulary. Won't share that here, but he said, "Don't you ever take up these things. They'll kill you. And if you don't smoke until you're 21, I'll give you a $100 bill. Well, to a 12-year-old, $100 bill back in the day, 1972, heck, I'd take $100 now. That meant a lot. And in his mind, if I didn't smoke until I was 21, I probably never would. Well, you know, he was absolutely right. Only kid, grandkid that made good on that deal. Guess where I was when I was 21 years old? I was knocking on his door. And he was ready for me and had a $100 bill in his hand and handed it to me. Well, unfortunately, the rest of my family didn't follow up on that deal. And every one of my family members have died from cancer, lung cancer, caused by cigarette smoking, including my mom. I had a tormented relationship with my mom growing up in Kansas City. And I'm convinced there was a lot of mental health issues that went undiagnosed and untreated. And over a year and a half ago, she was diagnosed with cancer, contributed to that by her smoking. And my uncle called me and said, "Russ, your mom's got cancer and it's bad." So I drove across the country to Kansas City to be there. And went and saw her at Shawnee Mission Medical Center there in Kansas City, Kansas, on the Kansas side. She was there, looked very yellowish, jaundice kind of look, and the news was bad. Cancer spread all over. Well, we got her home, and she had one of her meltdowns that she had throughout my whole lifetime, because this is the same woman that kept me from having a relationship with my father for all those years. And my uncle and I were enjoying each other as we had. My uncle and my grandfather had been very strong male role models in my life. Matter of fact, they used to take me to see All-Star Wrestling in Kansas City, Kansas on Thursday nights. It was guys' night out. And that was big time. You know, thought that wrestling was real stuff. And we were laughing, and my mother shouted out, "I'm over here dying of cancer, and you guys are laughing." She looked at me with the greatest evil in her eyes. My wife was standing there. My aunt and uncle are there in her house in Prairie Village, Kansas. Said, "You need to leave right now." And I left, crying, brokenhearted, broken-spirited. I was prepared to stay until her final days. Well, I left, never to talk with her again. And several months after all of that, a year actually, we were in Kansas City because guess what? My Uncle Larry had been diagnosed with cancer as well and was going to be leaving this earth soon as well. So I drove to see him in the same hospital. And while we were there, my wife and I went by to see my mom. And there in her house just off of State Line Road, 2 houses on the other side of State Line in Kansas, was a big trash dumpster sitting there in the driveway. I thought that was weird. And I looked at the windows, and they had decals on them like they were new. And I went up and peered inside the window, feeling like I was a trespasser on my mom's lawn. The house was empty, completely empty. So I went and knocked on the neighbor's door, said, "Hi, I'm Russ. My mother lived here for years, and I don't see her things." And the young 17-year-old teenager there looked at me and said, well, she died a year ago. Yeah. I learned a year after my mom died that she had died. And learned that she had gone to a hospice there in Kansas City. Had been cremated. I had been disinherited. And all the inheritance given to someone else. So this holiday season, this Christmas season, I know there's a lot of folks that have heartbreaking stories. God is the God of putting those pieces back together again. He is the God that can restore the years the locust ate. I know this firsthand. And as Christmas is coming close and near, if you have those hard stories and family gatherings are hard, I'm telling you, Father's Day and Mother's Day and holidays are very challenging for me because of that brokenness. But God has healed it. And I share that to be transparent because I know there are people listening here that have that same brokenness. And Jesus, Yeshua, the Son of God, is the King of Kings and came into this world to put those pieces back together again. Let's go to San Angelo, Texas. Charlinda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, and your story breaks my heart. My son committed suicide 3 years ago, so I too am alone, and I know how you feel. And he does feel brokenness.
Yes,
he does. The reason I called in today was about not being able to say Merry Christmas on a college campus. You know, I am a Christian, and this is the season. That is the reason we have Christmas to begin with. And I don't think that they should be able to muzzle me whenever they can say whatever to Allah or Buddha or whatever deity they worship. It muzzles me and my freedom, and it's not right. They're taking my rights away when their rights are still intact, and it bothers me. And I say Merry Christmas anyway.
Yeah, well,
if they don't like it, they can go back.
Well, good for you.
Wherever they came from.
Good for you. And Sherlanda in San Angelo, Texas, Merry Christmas. Thank you for calling Washington Watch.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
All right, let's go to Linda in Oklahoma City and give us a call right now. We'd love to hear from you. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Linda, welcome.
Thank you. I was listening to your information about the colleges.
Yes.
Think the solution is for us to remove our children and to remove all grants because all they would do is try to fill it up with kids who are on grants. And I think it's time that we hit them in the pocketbook.
Yeah, money does seem to be the one way that talks and gets people's attention, unfortunately. But, since the University of Missouri, where I went to school, had their meltdown and the Ferguson effect there in Columbia, Missouri, they're down some 3,000 students. They're down over $30 million in endowment giving, and they have seven dormitories or so on campus that are sitting empty as we speak because they don't have the students to fill them. And during the football season, alumni could rent a dorm room there for $100 a night or so. So, you know, you're absolutely right. The funding does impact, but will they listen? Thanks so much, Linda, for calling Washington Watch. I appreciate it. Give us a call. What are you doing this Christmas? What traditions do you have? How do you overcome, if you've got some of that brokenness that I was talking about, how do you deal with that over the holidays and over Christmas season? And what stories of healing do you have? What traditions do you have that promotes wholeness in your family? Give us a call, 866-372-7234. And if you're feeling that generous spirit, give us a call and Your gift will be doubled. $10 will become $20, $50 will become $100. We depend on that generosity here, and we have a generous donor who has come alongside us and partnered with us and doubling your gift, which is a wonderful thing. You're listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to Teresa in Little Rock, Arkansas. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I just wanted to agree with the lady. Just great. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to agree with the lady that just called. I just got in the car to listen, so I haven't heard everybody else. But
We just need to be Americans. This is America. We need to continue doing what we've been doing, the good things that we've been doing, and say Merry Christmas. And if they don't like it, then, like she said, they can just go back where they came from or you know, do what they want to do. But they can't muddle us. We have got to stop that.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen.
You know.
Well, I think folks are getting courage, and a lot of times that the leadership, it trickles down, and we're seeing courage in the White House, which makes a difference as well. Thanks so much for calling Washington Watch. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And yes, this will be the first Christmas that I haven't had my mom that I've known about. You know, as I shared earlier, it was a year after my mom died that I learned about it. And that was very taxing to go and see an empty home and not know. And but I was able to get her death certificate, and I have that here. And I've even been pondering writing an obituary for her. There was no service. There was no opportunity to mourn. There was no opportunity to have closure as we do in our Christian tradition to have funerals. And so I've been praying about that. Let's go to Tammy in Alton, Illinois. Tammy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. I'm sorry, I can't really hear you.
I can hear you. Hi. You're on the air.
Oh. Well, I guess I was just calling to, you were talking about new traditions. I guess I've had kind of a broken life here, too. Kids adopted out. And mm-hmm. I said after the grandma's passed, we have all the good old traditions. We're just kind of making some of our own. I have a Christmas breakfast, and this will be the first year I have all four of my children home with me.
Well, that'll be a blessing. That'll be a blessing.
Yep. My two that were adopted out are going to be back this year for Christmas. So,
well,
that is good. I was a little angry my whole life wondering why and how, but he does seem to always make things turn out good for those who love, trust him, and wait.
Amen. Well, Tammy, thanks so much for calling Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch, powered
Merry
by
Christmas.
The family. Merry Christmas to you, powered by the Family Research Council. And we have several people here on hold and would love to hear about your Christmas traditions. How do you deal with the pain that maybe has come there? Maybe Christmas wasn't joyful for you. Let's go to Hunter in East Texas.
Thanks for having me on. You know, the whole thing about Merry Christmas, I'll try to be as succinct as possible. I was working as a broker over the phone many years ago, and I had a customer who would call me, and he was Arab. I mean, you could tell by his first and last name, and he was a Muslim. And he mm-hmm. called during Christmas season one time, and he said, you know what? I'm a Muslim. He goes, mm-hmm. I obviously don't celebrate Christmas the way Christians do, but it doesn't offend me when you say Merry Christmas. It is a greeting of goodwill. It's not something to, you know, beat somebody down. It's no different than when I've been to the Middle East as a Messianic Jew, and I've met other Muslims and stuff, and I say, you know, salam, which means peace in Arabic. I mean, what is offensive about that? You know, it's one thing to say Merry Christmas, but, you know, what are college students supposed to say? Have a rotten day? I mean, it just
right.
doesn't make sense.
Right. Well, Hunter, thank you so much. You make excellent points, and let's not be afraid to say Merry Christmas. Let's not be afraid to understand our roots of our faith and where we come from, and to celebrate it, to know that Jesus is a God, is the Son of God, and our Savior, our Redeemer, our Restorer, the person that puts back all of the pieces, the brokenness. And you know, they say there's no such thing as a functional family, but some families are just more functional than others. So let's strive to be as functional as we can. And from 1 Thessalonians 5:11, therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just in fact that you are doing. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.